Hi, I'm Kalila Reynolds, and welcome to another live edition of Taking Stock. Yes, I am back. Shady's back. Deliverant. Guess who's back? Na-na-na. Big shout-outs to Keisha and Jermaine for holding the fort the past couple of weeks. I had some family issues to sort out. And back in the studio this week, I missed you, and I can tell that y'all missed me because I see some of you in the comments. So I am happy to be back. And the other thing is that it's been the budget debate time. And if you guys know me, you know I live for a good budget debate, right? I love this time of year. There's so many news stories that come out of it, and there's just so much to report on. And I always look forward to it. So having to miss it the past couple of weeks wasn't the best, but we are catching up in our content this week. I have quite a few budget videos coming out on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all social media platforms as usual. We're bringing you all the latest business news and telling you how it will affect you and your money. And remember to head over to the website, KalilaReynolds.com/newsletter. Once this live has ended, you're going to get the newsletter straight to your inbox twice a week. Also want to remind you to hit the like button. Let me see the likes. Subscribe to the channel. And let me know in the chat, where are you joining us from tonight? I want to know what turns you on. Oops, sorry, got distracted. Oh, my mind just does that sometimes. Just let me know in the comments below. Now, here's a look at what's coming up in tonight's show, followed by what's hot in business. And come on, let's get this money.
Did anyone say goodies? Prime Minister Andrew Holness has made several major announcements, which include a 44% minimum wage increase, a 74% increase in weekly pension, and a 15% increase in NHT's loan limit, among other things. We'll discuss highlights from the Prime Minister's budget presentation with President of the Private Sector Organization of Jamaica, Metro Siaga, and financial analyst Dennis Chung. And the analysts weigh in on the latest market developments. Guardian Holdings Limited results are out. How did they perform? And overseas, the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank has sent shockwaves through the financial market. We'll discuss. But first, here's What's Hot, brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. Cornerstone United Holdings Jamaica has outlined plans to delist Barita Investments from the Jamaica Stock Exchange as the parent company undergoes restructuring. The Banking Services Act requires every group of companies which contains deposit-taking institutions to hold all regulated entities under one financial holding company for consolidated supervision by the BOJ. The Cornerstone Group owns Cornerstone Trust and Merchant Bank, Barita Investments and Barita Unit Trusts Management. Barita and CTMB will be 100% owned by a financial holding company named Cornerstone Financial Group. According to Cornerstone, Barita will be delisted and Cornerstone Financial Group relisted in its place. Financial institutions have advised their customers that there may be some disruptions in service as a result of Sunday's attack on service provider Beryllium. Several Beryllium security guards were shot during a gun attack at a Scotiabank branch in Port Moore, St. Catherine. The injured guards were in the process of servicing the automated teller machines at the bank when gunmen robbed them of an undisclosed sum of cash. The company said it will be assessing its operations island-wide following the incident, which may result in delays in the delivery of services. This is the second attack on a Beryllium security team in Portmore this month. Earlier this month, a guard was killed during a robbery at the Jamaica National ATM at the Portmore Pines Plaza. Prime Minister Andrew Holness last week announced the island's biggest minimum wage increase in 20 years. During his budget debate presentation, the Prime Minister announced a 44% increase in the national minimum wage. He said that as of June 1, the national minimum wage will increase from $9,000 per 40-hour work week to $13,000. The minimum wage for industrial security guards will also increase from $10,500 per week to $14,000. Switzerland's biggest bank, UBS, bought its rival, Credit Suisse, on Monday in an emergency deal aimed at calming global financial market panic. UBS reportedly paid $3.25 billion for Credit Suisse, about 60% less than the bank was worth when markets closed on Friday. Credit Suisse shareholders will be largely wiped out, receiving the equivalent of just 0.76 Swiss francs in UBS shares for a stock that was worth 1.86 Swiss francs on Friday. According to a CNN report, Credit Suisse had been losing the trust of investors and customers for years, recording its worst loss since the global financial crisis in 2022. But confidence collapsed last week after it acknowledged material weakness in its bookkeeping and as the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank spread fear about weaker institutions. The European Central Bank raised interest rates by 50 basis points last week, despite fears about the impact of higher rates on the global banking system. This latest hike brings the Eurozone interest rates to a range of 3 to 3.5%. Europe's inflation rate was 8.5% in February. Economists had predicted that ECB might dial back their interest rate hikes as US banks collapse and troubles at Credit Suisse feed panic fears about the global banking system. ECB President Christine Lagarde said the central bank is fully equipped to provide support to the banking system. She said the bank was monitoring current market tensions closely and is ready to respond to preserve price and financial stability. What's Hot was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. This segment of Taking Stock is brought to you by Bulwark Insurance Agency, insurance made easy.
Just 2 hours with me can change your life, but don't take it from me.
Why I decided to buy Kalila's Masterclass, which is, for me, was a game changer.
I'm Kalila Reynolds, financial journalist and educator, and I'm on a mission to help you get better with money. Take my all-new Money Mission Masterclass. We're talking about budgeting.
My top things today were about budgeting and investing.
We're kicking bad debt out the door.
And I also learned about how to pay off your credit card debt.
And I'm giving you the keys to wealth creation by helping you getting started with investing.
This masterclass helped me to start my investment journey.
I had so many takeaways.
The way that I look at money now and saving, I look at it different now.
With a bonus module from Keisha Bailey, my girl, the profit jumpstarter, who'll show you how to find great companies to invest in.
I've been in the investing industry now for over 18 years.
So give yourself the best gift. Go to KalilaReynolds.com/masterclass to join the Money Mission. Let's get this money. All right, welcome back. Let me see who is joining us this week. I see a lot of comments here in the chat. Kish was first on the draw. Kish Lindsay commenting from 6:49 p.m., so more than an hour before the show started. David was also early birding before 7 o'clock. He was on. Calder George is checking in all the way from Japan. What time is it in Japan right now, Calder? Wow. Rodcliffe says Portmore in the house. Antoinette says, good night. I missed two consecutive weeks. Definitely here for my weekly fix. I don't want to experience withdrawal. Good, 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 good. So glad to have you back, Antoinette. Coincidentally, those were the 2 weeks that I was off. So you didn't miss me specifically, but you missed some good content. Big up once again, Keisha Bailey and Jermaine McDonald for holding the fort while I was away. Natoya says, here. I hope it's Kalila live and direct tonight. Yep, it's me. Reconstruction of Mindset says, time to get this money. I'm most excited about the increase in NHT loans. We're going to talk about it. And Sasha wants to know how many IG pages I have. Just the one. So all the others that you see are fake. Just report them as scammers, the scammers that they are, and block them whenever you see them. I just have the one page, one dega page, yeah? So let's get into it. Let's talk about it. So last week, we did a review of the first half of the budget debate. So we heard from the finance minister, Nigel Clark, his opening presentation, and we started hearing some more of that. And then Tuesday last week, we had Prime Minister Andrew Holness making his presentation. We also heard from the opposition. And then the finance minister, Dr. Nigel Clark, wrapped it up again today. So today was the closing of it. And so we have a lot to talk about that happened since our last show last week, including several major announcements coming from the Prime Minister, Andrew Holness. These include a 44% increase in the minimum wage, a 74% increase in weekly pension and a 15% increase in the amount that you can borrow from the NHT. We're going to discuss these highlights with the president of the Private Sector Organization of Jamaica, PSOJ, Metrisiaga. And we also have my good friend, financial analyst Dennis Chung, on with us. Hi, Metri. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, Kalila.
Good. Good to have you on your Jamaica shirt today, Dennis.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Any specific reason? Are you making a statement?
No. I mean, apart from the fact that I'm Jamaican.
All right. Well, I want to start with Metri. We spoke recently on Money Moves about your role as the new president of the PSOJ. And, you know, this role is definitely an advocacy role and one that you'll be speaking a lot more on social issues. So I definitely want to start with you and hear what were some of the highlights from the past couple of presentations. So we're going over the PM and Dr. Clark's closing today, as well as the response from the opposition.
Thanks for having me, Kalila. Well, first of all, there were a lot of nuggets from both presentations. If one didn't know better, they would have thought there was an election around the corner. It was filled with a lot of give backs to the country. The minimum wage, the Heart Trust NTA's removal of fees up to level 4, the increase in the NHT, and the list goes on and on. Then there was the other side of the coin, which was the fact that we were doing so much infrastructural work, so many roads and hospitals, and you name it, the government seems to be putting it out there and building and developing. I think it's now to see all of that come through and happen. Another big part of the equation was the tough step that the Minister of Finance made to actually tackle the wage negotiations and the reclassification exercise that was done. It needed to be done. It was a difficult task. It took a long time. But finally, it seems that we're at the end of a very tough road. And I'm happy that all workers have come on board, or most workers have come on board, and we can go forward now on a good footing. So yeah, all in all, I thought it was a very good budget. There are no new taxes, despite what others are saying. There are absolutely no new taxes. We just have better collection. And I think it's a good platform to push off from.
Awesome. So while I bring on Dennis, Metri, I want to ask you to recenter yourself, because for some reason you ended up drifting all the way in Makana. Just recenter yourself in the camera. Dennis, better? Let me talk to you. So major highlights for you.
Yeah, so I think it was a very good budget also. Probably is one of the best I've seen, because the budget presentation actually is something I've been clamoring for a long time, that, you know, we need to focus on development. And I think this is what the budget did. The fact of the matter is that what it is showing me in terms of the message is that we have made the sacrifices over the years, and now it's time to develop, right? So we have laid the foundation, and we're going to do some things now to move the economy forward. But not just move the economy forward, move the society forward, and move the people forward. Because if you look at all those things that have been done, so the minimum wage increase, the NHT loan increase, the removal of the fees for HAT, and the capital infrastructure investments that are taking place. And all of that is happening without us increasing our debt to GDP ratio. Right. That is significant.
Or raising taxes.
Or raising any new revenue measures. And that is significant. What it means is that all the work that we have done over the past few years in terms of fiscal prudence and carefully managing the economy, because we could have had runaway inflation if the BOJ did not take the action that they needed to, despite a lot of what people are saying that, you know, raising interest rates was wrong. It shows that it's paying off. And what we need to do is build on this foundation. You know, we can't afford to go back. We need to ensure that we remain on a fiscally prudent path, you know, not because we see a little light now, it means you're going to go out and rush and spend everything, because we're not safe yet, right? What we need to do is consider the fact that, you know, it's a very fragile situation still, but we are moving in the right direction. And when you look, I mean, I was more appreciative of the presentation by the Prime Minister, because it spoke to the societal development issues. And the truth is that, you know, the objective of a budget must be about improving the lives of people, not right. necessarily just presenting some numbers, you know, that we try to balance every year, so but improving the lives of people.
So true. The numbers are really about us, about the people. Yeah. Now, Metri, one of the biggest bits of news that came out of the entire thing was the Prime Minister's announcement about the minimum wage going up by 44%. From $9,000 to $13,000 for a 40-hour work week, and then you had the security guards going up as well. You represent business interests. And while this is great news for those who currently earn minimum wage, in the past, when there have been increases in the minimum wage, and this has been one of the largest we've seen in recent times for sure, 44%, in the past, when there have been increases, we've heard some disgruntlement from the private sector saying, well, we can't afford this increase in the minimum wage. We can't afford to pay this big, big jump in salaries. So what's the consensus, or what are you hearing from your members and people in the private sector about this change?
Let me first start by telling you my position, Khalila. I am 100% certain in my own mind that it is very difficult for people to live on the minimum wage that existed previously. It is still hard for people to live on the new minimum wage that has been proposed. However, it is a very delicate balance that the Minister of Finance has got to, it's a tightrope that he needs to walk to make sure that that the minimum wage that he sets does not create an inflationary measure. And I was speaking to an economist earlier today, and he was explaining to me that the fact that the people who earn below minimum wage only represent about 12%, or earn at minimum wage only represent about 12% of the population, so it should not create inflation.
12% is still a lot, though. That many people are living on minimum wage. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. But the bottom line is, Khalila, is that people need to get a livable wage. We just cannot continue. What we need to do is we need to pay people more, you know, but we need a bigger economy. And everything centers around a larger economy. We have got to grow our economy. Size is just simply too small.
All right, so you said that was your personal opinion. What have you been hearing now from others?
So I've had one or two calls from people saying, listen, it's going to affect them. It's going to affect their bottom line. They're going to have to lay off some people. I don't envisage that is going to be a real issue or a real problem. Whilst there may be the odd person that does have to lay off a few people, I think they'll be able to find jobs with the unemployment levels that they are at today.
How do you see it, Dennis?
I think it's going to be inflationary for the economy. We saw, for example, and remember, it's not just the minimum wage that has increased, but the payments to the guards have increased. And we saw, for example, in the court ruling where the compensation to guards went up by 40%. And you see the impact of the security costs on businesses. So if you put more money out there, which is what we're doing with no productivity increases, which we're not seeing yet, but the things that are being put in place are supposed to propel some of that. I think that you're going to have an inflationary impact. Hopefully it won't be something significant. And I think that the government had to increase the rate, you know, as to what the level was. You know, we could talk about that, but they had to increase it because the fact of the matter is that we've had inflation, and we've had significant inflation, and because of that, even as a short-term measure, you know, you have to increase it. However, if we don't increase productivity over the medium term to long term, then you're going to have an inflationary impact. And it boils down to really productivity at the level of the worker. You know, I don't think that there's anything that can be just done nationally that will impact everybody. But, you know, very importantly, in 2013, the IMF said that what is going to be critical to drive growth is labor market reform. We've never done it, right? And I think that that's hurting us, and that's going to hurt a lot of people. But, you know, I wouldn't argue with the minimum wage increase, but I know it's going to have an inflationary impact. You know,
I agree with you on that point, Dennis. I do believe it will have an inflationary impact as well. And I'm just going to give you a case in point. So related to this and the whole discussion about wages, we've been talking about the government negotiations with the public sector and that whole reclassification of wages, and teachers, one of the groups that got a big increase. Well, my children go to prep school, and I just got a notice from their school that school fees are going up by almost double. And the reason they had called a big PTA with all the parents, and they explained that, well, because public sector teachers are getting this big increase in salaries, we have to pay private sector teachers to match what the public sector teachers are earning. And that's just natural, or else, you know, they'll lose their teachers to the public sector. And, you know, so I think about that in this discussion and saying, well, if security guards and all the companies that hire people at minimum wage now have to pay their staff 44% more, then that's going to be passed on to whatever goods and services those companies produce.
That's definitely what's going to happen. How we need to really improve the standard of living and the real income of people is basically through productivity. But we have refused as a country to deal with labor market reform, and the truth is that many of us don't want it. We want the result, but we don't want to do what is necessary to get the result. So, you know, I think that we'll be continuously chasing our tails with this one, because, you know, we're not doing enough to affect productivity.
Yeah. And I know that's one of the issues that you've been harping on for a long time, Dennis. Just keep sounding that bell. So Metri, NHT was another big topic. The PM announced that now for single applicants, you're going to be able to access up to 7.5 million. It's currently 6.5, so you get an extra 1%. And if you're applying for a house, if you're trying to buy a house that's less than $12 million, they're going to give you $8.5 million of that, or as a loan, of course. And then you also have other increases in the loan ceilings as well. So joint contributors get an increase. Three people applying together can now borrow up to $21 million. What's your thought on this? Because some people will still say, well, 7.5 million can't buy no house anywhere. So what's your thought on that?
Listen, I think it's a good move. I think that they needed to do something. I think that more needs to be done at the NHT. I think there needs to be further transformation, but this is a step in the right direction. So I won't fight this yet. I want to see how things play out, and then we will move to the next stages, hopefully, of further reassessment of NHT's viability.
Dennis, good move?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good move. I think it will have some impact. I don't think it will have a significant impact on the housing situation. You know, what I would love to have seen happen with NHT funds is that we use some of that NHT funds every year to develop properly an informal settlement. So if we take one or two informal settlements every year and develop them properly, I think that you're going to see a much greater benefit for not only the housing solution, but solution to deal with services like, you know, police patrols, garbage collection, that sort of thing. I think that will add a greater quality of life to the persons, because even beside each residential community you have, and in a city in Jamaica basically, or in the corporate area, if we were to do that, we'd be raising property rate values also, you know. And I would have loved to see that initiative start to take place. You know, say so you take a community and you say, hey, we're going to build it out, we're going to build out infrastructure in here, we're going to build out roads, we're going to build proper houses. It might take you a year or 2 years, but you know, in another 10 years, you've really made a significant impact through the NHD, instead of just having the money sit down there and from time to time, you know, the consolidated fund raise it.
Imagine the impact in a very short period of time. But Metro, what about just making it simpler, easier, less complicated to buy and own a house in the first place?
Yeah, listen, I have my own thoughts on NHD, and one of the things that I would like to see is what Dennis just suggested, but there are other things. And we are, as an organization, the PSOJ is looking at how we can have dialogue with the government to get those changes made. But NHD is an institution in Jamaica. It's hard to change institutions. It's hard to get rid of institutions. So I think we have to gently persuade the powers that be what the right thing to do is. Look at all of the circumstances surrounding it, and you can be assured, and your listeners can be assured, that the PSOJ is not finished looking at the NHD and its effectiveness, and we'll be keeping a close eye on how we treat with NHD funds, because it's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Dennis Clinton is disagreeing with you. Clinton says the NHT should be of benefit mainly to contributors rather than developing ghettos.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, to each his own, but, you know, I don't see how we can be better off as people if people around us are not living properly, you know, and that's just a reality that we face. You know, the biggest challenge, I think, to the country in terms of infrastructure is informal settlements. You know, you can't collect garbage there, you can't collect property tax from them, you know, a lot of crime happens there, you know, and it's affecting us. So, you know, we can choose to develop our very nice homes, and you know, we drive 200 or 300 meters or a little more, you know, we see you know, some poorly developed housing communities. You know, we have to make our choice. And I think, and you know, I certainly agree with what, you know, Ronnie Tweed said years ago on a radio station, you can't really be well off if people around you are poor, you know. And I think that's
Khalil, in
terms of developing an environment. Yeah.
If I could just say it to your listener, the NHT has some inherently unfair policies that surround it. So everybody, for example, in the business that I run, in the factory that I have maybe 100 persons working with me. And if 5% of them have gotten an NHT home, it would be plenty. The other 95% of the people have put their money into the NHT and left it there for 7 years, so that 5 people out of 100 can get a house. And yes, a lot of people get back their money, but many don't. So there are some inherently unfair policies that I think we need to address. And I have some particular ideas on it, but I would prefer not to share them yet. I think that this move is a good first move. Allow the government to see how this runs, and then we can press them to make further changes.
Not hearing you, Khalilah.
I'm not hearing Khalilah.
Oh, Khalilah, you're still muted.
Come in, like God knows.
Yeah.
Are you hearing me now?
Yes.
Loud and clear.
Yes, my mic battery died, so now I had to. Good thing I had another one on standby. Live TV. We work with it. Yes, so I was saying the next thing regarding NHT is the addition of this new income band. So now if you earn $100,000 a week or more, which may sound rich to a lot of people, right? To some of you listening, say $100,000 a week? Not a month, a week. That's about $433,000 a month, $5 something million a year if you're earning that and you want to access an NHT loan, you now have to pay 5% interest. I don't know if that's really rich in Jamaica today, but what do you guys think about that additional income band? Is that fair?
Fair is a strong word. It is, yeah. I think they're tweaking. I think they're making some changes that will best suit. You know, Khalilah, what struck me in the Prime Minister's presentation is when he said that regardless of the gains we have made on the fiscal side of things, some of that has not seeped down into the lower ends of the society, and the spheres of people who are less fortunate. And I think some of the things that he has done here in his budget speech, the give backs that he has done, are showing that he feels that and is trying to give back. So I think that's the crux, that's the basis on which these decisions were made.
Yeah, you know, when I did the calculation, it, like I said, it sounds rich, you know, $433,000 a month in JMD. But when you convert it to US, it's only like $2,500 US a month. It's not that much, to be honest. But I want to look at, before we go, because we're running out of time, to me, what was probably the biggest announcement, apart from the minimum wage, but one that will have a huge, huge impact. And that is changes to NHT Heart Trust, removing all tuition and administrative fees for its programs up to level 4. So you can basically get an associate degree at Heart Trust for free, effective April 1. So how massive is this for the education system and how can we afford it? So I'm going to ask Metri first, how massive is it? And then Dennis, how can we afford this?
So it's probably the biggest thing that I saw in the budget presentation. And the rationale is that we have a lot of unattached youth that need something to do. We need a workforce that is well-trained. Now, anybody that does not go and get the training that has been offered by the government simply don't want to work. And I think it's going to make, I am hopeful it's going to make a big difference, because right now business people are suffering from not being able to find people to work in their business. And those that they do find are not capable. They're not ready for the workforce. I think what Heart is going to do is teach them how to become ready for the workforce, train them in the skills that they need, train them in the skills that we as business people need. And remember, no, it's the business people that are paying for subsidizing Heart, so that's who they should be training for. I think it's a great move, brilliant move.
Dennis, how can we afford to make education at that level free?
I think the way I'd answer that is by saying we can't afford not to, because what has been causing us pain all these years is a low productive labor force. So we need to do something. And, I like it. I mean, the free tuition in the 1970s was one of the best things that happened to transform our labor force, and give a lot of people economic and other opportunities. And I think that doing this is actually a great move to ensure that we have a future labor force that is better skilled and can make more money. That is the only way that you're going to improve the standard of living of people, right? Growing the economy at 100% a year, as I always say, if it requires engineers and you're not an engineer, you will never benefit. So this is really the way to improve the lives of people. And that's why I said that the presentation by the PM, I think, was the most interesting one for me, because it focused on a matter of how can we improve lives. And, it ties back into the fact that our debt to GDP ratio are coming down and we have more money to spend from what we take in, and the tax efficiency collection rate has been going up. So it means that we can afford to do it. And I agree with Metri. Anybody who doesn't take up the offer and they don't want to work, I think the alternative should be that they are forced to go into the army for a little while, like in some countries.
Interesting take. Well, I want to thank you guys for your perspectives this evening. Metri Siaga, Dennis Chung, great talking with you.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, Kalila. No, take care. Bye-bye.
And let me ask our viewers and those of you watching and listening, here's our poll. What do you think was the most impactful announcement from Prime Minister Andrew Holness in his budget presentation? A, the increase in the NHT loan limit. B, increase in minimum wage. C, increase in pension. D, free programs at HeartTrust. Or other, you can just leave a comment and let us know what you think was the most impactful thing coming out of those presentations. We're going to take a quick break and have your market recap. And then, of course, the analysts are standing by.
This segment of Taking Stock was brought to you by Bulwark Insurance Agency, Insurance Made Easy.
Hey, moneymakers, join the KRM fam with our official merch. Get it now at KalilaReynolds.com. Let's get this money.
The JSE Combined Index lost 5,000 points or 1.5% last week. 125 stocks traded across the main and junior markets for the week ending Friday, March 17, 2023. 55 made gains, 62 lost value, and 8 stayed the same. 379 million shares changed hands on the Jamaican dollar market, valued at $1.1 billion. JFP was the week's most traded stock. It took up 69% of market volume, with 262 million shares trading. The stock opened Monday at $1.60. JMMB 7.35% cumulative redeemable preference shares traded the second highest. The stock opened this week at $2.95. And Darimon Trading rounded out last week's most traded, with 16 million shares changing hands. The stock gained 5 cents to open Monday at $2.15. Now let's see who had the biggest gains for the week. JPS 7% was the week's biggest gainer. The stock was up 87% to open Monday at $154.08. Palace was the second biggest gainer. It went up 27% to start the new week at $3.45. Epley 7.5% preference shares due 2024 rounded out last week's biggest gains. The stock was up 19% to start the new week at $7.95. On the losing side now, MPC Caribbean Clean Energy was last week's biggest loser, down 17%. The stock opened Monday at $74.68. JMMB 7% VRJMDCR preference shares was down 15%, opening the new week at $2.03. And Cygnus Real Estate Finance USD was also down 15%, closing the week at 7 cents US. Over on the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange, the composite index was mostly flat last week. National Enterprises was the most traded stock. It opened this week at $3.74 TT. Calypso Macro Index Fund was the market's biggest gainer, up 8%, to open this week at $22.52 TT. And on the losing side, West Indian Tobacco Company fell 8% to open Monday at $17.03 TT. Over in the U.S., the Dow Jones was mostly flat last week, while the S&P 500 gained 2% and the Nasdaq gained 5%. At the pumps, 87 gas prices went down 25 cents last week, while 90 gained 25 cents. Diesel prices, on the other hand, were down $4.50. In foreign exchange, it took an average $151.99 Jamaican to purchase one U.S. dollar last Friday. That's $1.56 less than a week before. Meanwhile, it took an average $111.03 Jamaican to purchase one Canadian dollar. One British pound cost on average $185.53 Jamaican. And you could buy 1 euro for $164.73 Jamaican on average. Finally, on the crypto markets, Bitcoin prices rose almost 16% over the past 5 days, with the cryptocurrency trading at $28,213 on Monday, while Ethereum rose 7%, trading at $1,781 on Monday. This segment of Taking Stock, The Analysts, is brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. Disclaimer: this is not intended as financial advice. Please consult a licensed financial advisor before making investment decisions.
Welcome back. Let me see what you guys are saying regarding the poll. What was the most impactful? Most of you saying, well, Elaine said everything. Stephen says B, which was, what was B again? And B was the increase in the minimum wage. Most of you saying D. D was Heart Trust. So Richard says D. Lorian says D. Steve says D for sure. Elaine says, can I say all? So yeah, there was quite a bit of impactful announcements made, and things that, not just announcements, but coming into effect within the next month to 3 months. Some of your other comments, Kish, wanting to know, how do we get a bigger economy? Through business, I would say. You know, entrepreneurs solving problems, growing the economy, starting new businesses, hiring new people, more spending power for all. Dravé says the import cost needs to drop so that companies can better afford the raw materials needed to produce, because we all know that 90% of raw materials are imported. Nick says the increase by government is of little to no effect. Inflation is making a mockery of wages. Oh, inflation. Steve says, I totally agree with Dennis on this. We have to invest in the skill sets of the workforce so that we can improve on productivity. And then Coffee wants to know, so 12 years of government schooling isn't enough. Read the Heart Trust of Free School. And Elaine answering, no, it is not enough. Raquel says they also need to remove the age block, as well as we have a lot of persons who are outside of the youth stage, still working age, but are blocked by the age restrictions. So let's go. And last one from Elricos, who says, Heart was meant to be free from inception. So we're going to hear some more from our analyst panel. I'm joined by Clive Charlton, equity trader at JMMB, and CEO of Profit Jump Starter, Keisha Bailey. Welcome, Clive. Hey. Welcome back, Keisha. Hi, how are you? And Keisha, let me thank you in person now for holding the fort.
Oh, yeah.
You did a great job.
No worries.
Keisha the teacher. You know that's your name now, right?
Yeah. They're just running with it. The people in the ministry are like, Keisha the teacher. Yeah.
Well, we have a few things to talk about in this segment this evening, including what on earth is going on overseas with all the banking, the entire banking sector, it seems. But let's start locally first. Clive, Guardian Holdings Limited. We have their financial performance, their consolidated statements for the year ending December 31, 2022. That is out. How did they do? What should we know?
Quite well. They did very well. In fact, I think they did well. Their revenue grew significantly. Their profits also grew significantly. Their asset base grew. Shareholders' equity also grew considerably. Their regional entity, they're in some of the larger Caribbean islands that cover health, life, property, as well as pension funds. So they're fairly diversified in that risk. You know, that sector that handles risk, right? And they've done exceptionally well. Now, just a quick little preamble. What does an insurance company do? I took down a little bit of note here, right? Insurance companies base their business models around assuming and diversifying risk. I think I need to stay there because sometimes there's a slight difference between insurance company and the general financial entities like a bank, which is slightly different from an investment company, the revenue stream and the balance sheets, right? So insurance company carry risk. Now, the essential model involves pooling risk of individual payers and redistributing that risk across larger portfolios. Quickly, I don't want to take up too much time. So insurance company made their primary income by charging a premium to customers for insurance coverage. To make a profit, the insurance company ensured that premiums are greater than any future claims. Right? And this is known as underwriting profit, and you'll see that in the P&L. And they did well in that area. Apart from that, just like any astute financial companies, they must make investment in various government instruments and all over the economy. We know through other subsidiaries and associated company, Guardian also is into property development, right? And there are two, and Jamaica really has provided a good deal of their revenue. I think Jamaica provided about 22% of gross revenue and about 51% of profits. Net profits. So Guardian Holding has done well right across the board, including different geographic area that it operates in.
I was just going to ask you about Clyde, you hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing.
I was just going to ask you about the contribution from Jamaica, because the Observer's headline was Jamaica delivers Guardian Holdings a record year. So, giving Jamaica the credit for that. As you guys know, Guardian Holdings is a Trinidad and Tobago-based company, but they also have Jamaica operations.
Yes.
Say that's a justifiable headline based on what you've just outlined?
Well, the numbers speak for itself. Yes, it is. But, you know, there are some unique... Jamaica right now is a recovering economy, if I could use that term, right? Remember, for the last, 30-plus years or so, we were really not growing in real terms. And for the last 6-7 years, because of certain fiscal and macroeconomic adjustment, the economy has been growing. You know, apart from the persistent devaluation, I would say the economy has grown in real terms. And this has provided opportunity. So more jobs being created. We see a lot of pooled health insurance. That will drive it. There's significant creativity in the type of insurance products that are reaching even the class or the workforce that generally would be considered in terms of income at the lower level income. These persons can now buy specific products. We now have creative insurance products. For example, I saw an ad on TV, not Guardian, JN, about the short-term motor vehicle insurance. So, you know, and I suppose with the Uber and all these things, you'd perhaps have different type of insurance products. With the housing BYB, B2,
what Airbnb. Is it?
Airbnb, sorry, right. With that, you know, I don't think there are any regulations, but I'm sure the sensible person who want to protect their property will have some special insurance for that. So these are various ways that the Jamaican economy is providing far more opportunities, you know, for the other sectors, right? And development in terms of property, that is property insurance right there, right? As I said, jobs are being created, people are being employed, they can have more life insurance, companies will have health insurance. All of that is happening. So it's justified. And the numbers speak for itself that Jamaica has provided that opportunity. Of course, Guardian has provided an opportunity by, you know, at least spreading its risk and its exposure to Jamaica.
So who is this a good buy for right now?
Well, diversification is good. Based on the numbers we have seen, based on the metric, based on the research that our research team have done, particularly Trinidad and counterpart, it has shown revenue and dividend distribution growing over the last 4 quarters, right? In a case like that, I would have it as a hold, because the challenge that it may face now, I've asked my research team to look more closely at this, is that there's a huge reinsurance risk now, right across the industry,
where
property is concerned, right? It's not just Guardian, it's the entire Caribbean and perhaps Latin American insurance sector. Because, you know, you have to, as I said earlier, that you diversify your risk. Insurance companies base their business models and assume and diversify their risk, right? And insurance company make their primary income by charging premiums to customers and then diversifying that risk. Part of it is not just to assess risk, to ensure that they charge a premium that the risk can cover. That's one. But also, you reinsure by spreading that risk further. So when the company charges you a premium, health, life, or property, then now they reinsure with some companies way outside of the jurisdiction of the Caribbean in case of property. We have hurricanes, floodings, etc. Well, you'd want to, you know, diversify your risk, reinsure with some companies, insurance company, somewhere else outside of this region. Well, that now, I can't say specifically what numbers they have to justify that, but the fact of the matter is that that is one of those things that you're a price taker, right? So if the reinsurance company says they're going to increase the risk, then they are going to increase the risk. And I suppose that global risk has increased with wars, you know, popping up here and all over the place, you know, and even commodity prices that would impact also reinsurance companies in various areas.
Yeah, we had this discussion a couple months ago about the whole reinsurance issue. But Keisha, boy, it's been a hell of a week internationally in banking and finance. So we had Silicon Valley Bank, a lender to some of the biggest names in the tech world, being the largest bank to fail since the 2008 financial crisis. And then we had this whole thing with Swiss. You just fill us in. What's happening?
the saga of the U.S. bank. So it started last week with Silicon Valley Bank in California. So it's a regional bank. So its operations were in that area of California. They had a run on the bank, meaning that depositors started coming and said, look here, I need to pull out my money. No, because what was happening, all of this started back in 2020 with the pandemic. Tech companies at that time became very favorable. Everybody was starting tech companies. A lot of money was going into tech companies. Capital was going into tech companies very, very quickly. So Silicon Valley Bank, being the bank for tech companies, they had a very good problem. They had a lot of deposits, more money than they could think of, and they didn't know what to do. So what the leaders of Silicon Valley Bank did was say, all right, let's put our money in U.S. Treasury bills because we have so many deposits, so much deposits, people aren't coming to pull them out. So let's put our money in these treasury bills. They put the money there, but then come 2022, last year, when interest rates started going up so quickly, the value of the T-bills started to fall. So Silicon Valley Bank was losing money from the treasury bills, but they still had customers to pay. So word of that got around, and depositors started coming to say, look here, give me back my money because I hear that, you know, you're having problems. The thing is, the typical depositor at Silicon Valley Bank had millions of dollars because these were tech companies. And even though the US FDIC insures $250,000, the bank balances were in the millions. So people were still worried. The average person there had $2-3 million in their bank account. So there was this big lineup, depositors wanted to get money. And it spilled over now. The same thing about the treasury bills now started affecting Signature Bank, which is now the bank for the crypto firms. And we know last year with crypto winter and everything that was happening, that bank started experiencing problems. So another run there. So there was a lot of panic around, you know, we need back our money, depositors, we need back our money. And the banks weren't in a position to give back the depositors' money. So steps in now, the U.S. government, they step in and they say, don't worry, we're going to guarantee that all depositors will get back their money. So Biden, President Biden stepped in, saying, you know what, we're going to repay everyone. That quelled that down for that point. Then next bank, First Republic Bank, another regional bank, they started having issues. Same thing again, because they had so much money in treasury bills and problems there to pay back depositors because people got weary now, they started going to the bank, pulling out funds. So now to shore up First Republic Bank, we had the big banks in the US, you know, the Bank of America, the Citibank, JP Morgan, they came together and say, you know what, we're going to lend you some money so you can pay back your depositors. That's what happened there. Next one now, overseas, Credit Suisse, the second largest bank in Switzerland. For years, Credit Suisse has been struggling. For years, they've been hit with a lot of lawsuits. a lot of internal breaches. They've always been under pressure and been struggling. Now, depositors started pulling money from there as well, but this is a large bank. Credit Suisse has been identified as one of the global systemic banks, right? They're very important to the overall global financial system.
Wait, so is this one related to the other bank failures, or this is just a different thing that happened to happen at the same time?
So usually what happens, one thing that rattles one, you know, the tide just rolls out and everybody that have them pants down, they get caught. So the weaker banks would have problems. So Credit Suisse was already struggling, and this whole thing of the banks pull, having that run created no pressure for them, because persons started saying, well, if this is happening in the US, we already know Credit Suisse is struggling. Let's go pull out our money. But it's such a large bank. So the Swiss National Bank, the central bank of Switzerland, they had to step in with $50 billion to say, all right, let's go. We need to give this money over to Credit Suisse. Still wasn't enough. So UBS on Sunday came in and said they would buy Credit Suisse, because all this had to be done before Monday when markets opened, because it would have been panic, mayhem, if this bank was still struggling by Monday when markets opened. So a deal was done late Sunday. Credit Suisse is now going to be taken over by UBS. The thing, though, is that the U.S. banks still have problems ongoing. So who are they tapping on now for money? Who? Warren Buffett.
Oh, gosh.
Good old Warren Buffett, because his company has a lot of cash, and he's known as a value investor to find these companies that are struggling, but that have strong fundamentals, and then buy them at really attractive prices. So I know, based on what's out there in the news, that he was called in to have discussions around possibly taking an investment position in some of these regional banks that are struggling. So the saga continues, you know, it's ongoing. Today the markets were looking much better, because we're seeing signs where, you know, things look like they're being sorted out behind the scenes. But tomorrow is the big day. Tomorrow is Fed Day, March 22nd. We're expecting to see what will the Fed do now with interest rates. Are they going to raise interest rates again, or are they kind of just going to cool off based on what's happening? So all eyes are on Jerome Powell and his team and what they're going to be talking about. Because the funny thing also is that they went into that lockdown period. They couldn't talk 1 week before Fed rates are out. So right as the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank happened, no one from the Fed could publicly go out and make. So tomorrow is going to be the first day that we really can hear their sentiments about all of these bank failures. So that'd be important.
Especially since, you know, part of it is because of what happened with the T-bills, which...
Yes. That's the big thing. Which, I mean, last I figured something would come, because when you have this massive pace of increase just like that, like summer has to break. We haven't seen this amount of increase. And my personal feeling on it is that, you know, the world these days is just a world that thrives on debt and credit. Governments, businesses, persons, you know, it's a game of credit and how to use it. Credit doesn't work well with high interest rates. Things are going to break. So that's what we see happening now, right? Mm-hmm. So the governments have stepped in to save the day, but I mean, the money has to eventually come from somewhere, right? It's now the government, so more money has to be printed. Does that mean more debt? Does that mean higher taxes? We don't know.
But yeah, so a lot of fingers pointing at the Fed right now. So indeed, that's going to be a hot press conference tomorrow when we hear what will follow and his team have to say. So let me take a couple comments. Kofi says they didn't care about the FDIC because they knew they'd get a bailout, and they were right. So
yeah,
this has happened in America before. Banks get a bailout. What's new? And then Shellyann says Biden using taxpayers' money to repay billionaires. Now, I want to hear your thoughts on that. Well, all right, you go, Clive, because I have some thoughts on it too, but you go first.
Well, I really didn't expect a comment on it, but he specifically said, I think he's being very cautious. Interest rate is going up. Persons are losing their job. So he did state that the principal shareholders will not be bailed out. It's really to safeguard the deposits, of which I can understand the government will do, you know? And yeah, so billionaires will not be bailed out this time around.
Yeah, but when you think about it, Clive, the customers of these banks aren't, you know, your regular Aunt Flo and Mas Joe. They're tech million and billion dollar companies. That's who
they're also quite a few tech here. Startups, though, Keisha. There are also many tech startups. And when you look at
what they do with the money,
this is payroll. This is money that you need to pay your staff. You know, it's not necessarily money for me to have in my pocket. It is money to run the business.
Right, but it's a company fund, so there are millions of dollars here at stake. How much of that really flows to the end person is a whole other story, right? But they're just paying back deposits in total, not just, hey, we'll give you back enough money to pay staff. They're giving you back everything. So it will flow to the millionaires and billionaires still.
Nice to be a billionaire. Adea wants to know, how can we keep up with the Fed announcements?
Oh. Well, I mean, it's all over the news. Tomorrow, the Fed's going to report at 2 p.m. Eastern, which is 1 p.m. Jamaica time. So you just watch for that on any news outlet, CNN, CNBC. It's out everywhere.
Right. And in addition to that, you can get the publication dates. I think just log on, search for it, Fed announcements, or any of these critical terms, and you'll see all the dates when different type of announcements are made.
Yeah.
And then you can just put that into your calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see these expensive phones you have? We can utilize.
Put them in Apple. Yeah. Apple has the stuff.
Google.
Yeah. So just
I'm sure it's on YouTube. Actually, yes, I have seen it streaming on YouTube before. So
yes, and then just put in the date into your calendar, just like that. That phone. Good use, good value. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. All right. So a few more comments before we go. Let me see. Vidal says money came from taxpayers in Credit Suisse bailout. So there's that. Vidal again saying instead of bailing out the rich, they will use bail in. Philip says tech startup in the USA is not a joke. Something that is facts. That's facts. Tech startup is multi-millions of dollars. Yeah. Rosa wants to know which company can bail out. you guys are on fire with the comments this evening. Yes. And Elaine says 0.00 odd 1 cent on the dollar for he who shall not be named. Company that starts with an S. And an L.
Yes, and then S in between.
S in between. Roswell said, when SSL situation gets sorted out, look out, opportunities. Oh, really? Okay. LeVar wants to know, what's the latest on Bolt's money? SSL failed and no one came to bail them out. Well, that's a fraud case, so that's a bit different. All right. But yeah, we haven't heard anything about that in a while, indeed. It's time to follow up on that. We had heard, what's our version of, what's her name again?
JDIC?
What is that?
JDIC?
JDIC. The one that Everton McFarlane was the head of.
FSC.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Last I heard, they were supposed to make a statement, and that was weeks ago. And now I haven't heard anything since. Mm-hmm. So yeah, waiting on that. But thank you guys so much for explaining what's going on locally and internationally. Are you sitting news boat Barita now? That's something we got to talk about probably next week. See what's happening there. Thank you so much, Keisha. Thank you, Clive.
You're most welcome.
Bye.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a quick break and come back with final comments.
This segment of Taking Stock, the Analysts, was brought to you by JMNB Group, your best interest at heart.
So a few more comments from our viewers here. Let me see what we have. Philip says, will this banking industry fallout affect our equities market significantly? Yes, I was supposed to ask that question. You asked it a little bit too late and I forgot. Elaine says it's a 7-day wonder. Kevin says, Kalila, Patwa, come on. Getting better, guys. It's true. Yeah. Shelly-Ann wants to know any IPO, APO. There are some in the works. Yep. I've been hearing for a minute now. They're coming out. I just don't know when exactly, but there are some being prepared as we speak. Russell wants to know what's up with Barita. As soon as the show finishes, just scroll back to the beginning in What's Hot in Business, and you'll see the report about Barita, what's happening with Barita. So, guys, did you watch or listen to Stocks on the Rocks last night? KRM pitched for some funding. We have some plans up our sleeve. We're looking for some financing to make it happen for you, of course, for you, all for you. So we're looking to launch our membership platform within the next 2 months. And I am very excited to share more information about that with you in the coming weeks. I know you all would love to be members of this new and amazing platform when it comes out. I also have a new course coming out in 2 weeks. What day today? The 21st? 3 weeks, April 15th. Not related to finance, though, although you can make some money from it. It is actually writing for social media. So I was working on some stuff to train my own team. And while I was putting together the content, I was like, you know what? Other people could benefit from this as well. So you get to be a part of the training that I'm going to be giving my own team. Writing for social media class, the course is going to be a live course on Zoom. And that will be on a Saturday, April 15, which is the week after Easter weekend, day before Carnival, for those of you who are into Carnival. And I'll be announcing more details about that later this week. Should be by Friday. You'll be hearing more about that and how to sign up for that course, Writing for Social Media. We're going to go over hooks. We're going to go over how to go viral without dancing. Would you believe it that my most viral videos, and I am known for doing a little shimmy shimmy now and again, but those are not the videos that go viral, probably for good reason, because I'm not a great dancer. But the videos that do the best for me are actually the educational videos. We had one that went viral recently that got 1.3 million views. And that there was no dancing. It was just me sharing some information. And it was a long video. It was about 3 minutes long. And so I'm going to teach you how to write in that type of style to, you know, bring that bang for your buck. So if you are in marketing, if you're in media, if you just want to be a content creator, then this course is for you. And of course, make sure you're on the newsletter. So that's when we send out the email alerts about it, you know how to register. Well, that's our show for this week. I want to remind you to like the video, subscribe to the channel. I need to say it like Nerissa, my daughter. So subscribe. She can't say subscribe. So subscribe to this channel and share with a friend. Also subscribe to the newsletter at KalilaReynolds.com/newsletter. And turn on the post notifications so you can see everything when it drops. We want to help more people learn about money, so we can all get this money together. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Kalila Ray. And follow KRM underscore business news on Instagram. Remember, those are my only accounts. I do not have any backup accounts. And if you want to connect with the analysts this week, check the description box below for their contact information. You can also visit the website, KalilaReynolds.com, for financial information you can use however you like it. If you want to watch, if you want to listen to the podcast, or if you want to just read our articles, just read the episode summaries, you can do that on the website. Now tell a friend about taking stock, because investing is the new sexy. So let's make it cool to talk about money. I'm Kalila Reynolds. Thanks for watching. See you soon.
Let's get this money.